right, good afternoon. Now, I want to introduce someone to you, okay? You want to meet them? Yes, say yes. Louis Rebo, I want you to stand up. Stand up. There you go. Now, I want you to applaud this man right here. Okay, you can sit down. You can sit down. We're done. Anyway, I'm at lunch with Chip, friends, and they're talking about Louis Rebo in the back seat. And I go, Louis Rebo? Do you know Louis Rebo? They went, yeah. And we're going, is this the same Louis Rebo? Well, anyway, Chip calls him. He's showing up in the last few minutes. Louis's signature is on my ordination certificate from 1980. Before he knew me. He was forced to sign it, but I've whited it out. People go, who is that? And I go, you don't want to hear the story. All right, afternoon session. Good to see all of you. Now, we've had lunch. It's warm, and we're all ready for a nap, right? No one likes to do the afternoon sessions. Howard Hendricks used to say in the afternoon sessions, I never forget it, his exact words were, if you're tired, don't fight it. Just lay your head down and go to sleep. Now, I never knew anybody that had the courage to do that. No one ever did it, that's for sure. Now, I can tell you why I'm tired. I know why you're tired. But it's not iron, poor blood, or it's not lack of vitamins. It's because I calculated. I did a study. Here's why I'm tired. There's 325 million people in the United States. Everybody, that's right. Okay, got it? 75 million of them are retired and just sitting on their decks doing nothing. All right? That leaves 250 million. 85 million are in school, studying, maybe, we hope. That leaves 165 million. 45 million are teenagers studying their iPhones. That leaves 120 million. 25 million are playing golf right now. That leaves 95 million. Of the 95 million, 80 million are buying stuff on Amazon right now. That leaves 15 million. 5 million are at the movies or watching TV. That leaves 10 million. 6 million are at the beach starting their vacation. That leaves 4 million. 3.8 million are buying a Starbucks coffee right now. That leaves 200,000. 100,000 are Democrats running for president of the United States. That leaves 100,000. 99,900 are on some vacation somewhere. That leaves 100. And 99 of you of the 100 are sitting in the audience doing nothing. And that's why I'm tired. I'm the only one working. So just enjoy in the entire United States. Okay, this morning I spoke on Ephesians 4. Spiritual gifts, what is the ultimate why of spiritual gifts? And the answer, in my opinion, is to exercise those incredible gifts we've been given by God in a way that shows the love and fullness of Christ, humble servant love. Now, this afternoon, I want to talk to you about spiritual gifts, the ultimate where, okay? And I think this is extremely important because, now listen, if I have a gift of pastor teacher, okay, it does not mean that it works well everywhere. Got it? If I have a gift of leadership, it does not mean that it is strong everywhere. If I have a gift of helps or service, it does not mean that it has equal muscle everywhere. Now, 1 Corinthians chapter 12, specifically verses 4, 5, and 6, and we're going to look at those, give us some common sense help. There's a lot of just plain common sense in the Bible. You get tons of it in the book of Proverbs. But 1 Corinthians 12, 4, 5, and 6, give us common sense help, and I hope this helps you. I used to teach this year after year after year to our leaders in our program in New Zealand. Common sense about where it might be most practical to best use your spiritual gift or gifts. No one is quite sure how to define common sense, but it's a pretty important concept. Some think that the Bible speaks about common sense when it talks about discretion or wisdom, these kinds of things. The world talks about common sense as practical intelligence or sound judgment. In my sailboat manual, I sailed race sailboats in New Zealand for the 20 years we were there, and they'd always give us a book each year to remind us. It was a brand new, it was called Rules of the Road for Sailors. Rules of the Road. And on the front it said, obey the laws and use common sense. Now, some say common sense is simply, I used to have an elder say, I said, what do you think common sense is? And he says, it's the ability to connect the dots. Okay? Connect the dots in thinking, that kind of thing. And I like that a lot. Common sense can help you connect the dots in your marriage. You need some common sense in your marriage. When a man is quiet, connect the dots. He is thinking. When a woman is quiet, she is mad. Okay? That's common sense. Norman Geisler summed it all up for me, one of my favorite professors at Dallas Seminary. He said it this way, I've never forgotten. He said, if you want knowledge, go to man. If you want wisdom, go to God. But if you don't have any common sense, neither God nor man can help you. And I think that's true to a large degree. Now, what I want us to do is I want us to look, if you have your Bibles, open it to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, 1 through 11. We're just going to focus on three verses, but I do want to read it, okay? Now, concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I do not want you to be ignorant. You know that you were Gentiles, carried away to these dumb idols. However you were led. Therefore, I make known to you that no one speaking by the Spirit of God calls Jesus accursed, and no one can say that Jesus is Lord except by the Holy Spirit. Now here we go. There are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are different ministries, but the same Lord. And there are diversities of activities, but it is the same God who works all in all. But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to each one for the profit of all. I talked about that this morning. For to one is given the word of wisdom through the Spirit, to another the word of knowledge through the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing by the same Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another discerning of spirits, to another different kinds of tongues, to another interpretation of tongues, but one and the same Spirit works all these things, distributing to each one individually as he wills. Now, let me run through a list of statements about which I think most everyone agrees, okay? There's not a lot of big fights about this. First one is spiritual gifts matter. They are a big deal. And I think that's why it was all the more shocking to me when Barna put out the study that said 63% of Christians do not even know what their spiritual gift or gifts are. They matter, okay? It is possible to be ignorant about spiritual gifts. And if I'm ignorant about spiritual gifts, that leads to confusion and it leads to error. So we don't want to be that. We don't want to be a bunch of dumbbells. It is possible to forget the foundation of love, which in my opinion, and I hope it's yours, is what I talked about this morning. The foundation in the use of spiritual gifts is that of love. It's the engine. It's the driving force. It's why we use them. Servant love. There's also agreement that it is a must that we develop, grow, and mature our spiritual gifts. You may have a particular spiritual gift. It might be hospitality, it might be teaching. Well, it just isn't at its height the moment you get it. You have to work it, you have to develop it, you have to grow it. You have to think about it, you have to pray about it, that kind of thing. Spiritual gifts are to be used for the common good, for the profit of all. I may enjoy using my teaching gift, but wait a minute, it's not for me. It's for you, it's to help you. And not having a specific spiritual gift does not let us off the hook. In other words, I may not have the gift of mercy, as I joked about this morning, But still, I am supposed to show mercy. I'm supposed to grow that in my life, to be merciful and gracious. I may not have the gift of giving. I do not have the gift of giving. My wife has the gift of giving, but I'm still supposed to be generous and think through the aspect of giving as a Christian. Now, let me run through a list of statements about which there are congenial disagreements and sometimes even parting of the way disagreements. And some of those are how we define each spiritual gift. It was fun, but I was stunned at the different definitions of the same gift when you start studying it. Oh my goodness, you just cannot even believe. So there's lots of disagreement in terms of, well, what does this spiritual gift even mean? What is it? What does it look like? That kind of thing. Gifts of healings, miracles, prophecy, and tongues. There's disagreement about that, as you well know. Are they for today? Yes or no? Spiritual gifts for the individual. Do they change over time? Yes or no? Some people think they can change. Some people think, yeah, you could have this gift today, but you know, God might just slowly remove it or take it away or lessen it for you and give you something else to do something in another direction. I've never thought about that much. I've never really experienced it that much, but some people think, no, that's a big deal, so pay attention. The Holy Spirit's at work in you all the time. He may change it. Okay? And then, are there more spiritual gifts than the list we have in the New Testament? Some think, nope, that's it. What we have in the New Testament, that's it. But what if all you had was Peter's epistle and all you had was this statement, there are speaking gifts and there are serving gifts, and there's no other list beyond that? What would you do with that? So are there more than just what we have in the New Testament? So people disagree about that. I don't get in fights about these things, but people have their disagreements. But let me focus on, this is where I want to go. This is why I asked to do this workshop. Let me focus on and apply verses 4-6. And I hope it helps you as it helped me. It's helped me in more ways than I can even count. And if you at all are listening to me today and you think, boy, you are really missing something. You are off here. This is not good what you're teaching. I want you to come up and tell me, because I teach this a lot around the world. I go to Kenya, wherever I go, in all these countries, I bring this up and I teach it. So I want to know if you think I'm off. You will not hurt my feelings. For me, these three verses speak to the where of spiritual gift use. Now let's read verses 4, 5, and 6 one more time. There are diversities of gifts, but there's the same Spirit. The Trinity's involved in all this. I'm not taking time with that. There are differences of ministries, but there's the same Lord. And there are diversities of activities, but it is the same God who works all in all. Now, the first thing I want us to know is the word diversities, okay? The same Greek word is used three times in these three verses. Twice in the New King James Bible, it's translated diversities, and once it's translated differences. Why they changed it on the third go, I don't know. It's the same exact word, okay? I don't question these guys that are smarter than me, but anyway, it's the same word, diversities. Diaresis, diversities, differences. There's a division, a distribution, a distinction, a variety, an assortment, a multiplicity, a range of spiritual gifts. There's a lot of different spiritual gifts. That's all that's saying. No one really has a problem with numerous spiritual gifts, and this is easy. We all get this. Very few people disagree with this. But there's not just a diversity of spiritual gifts, okay? There is a diversity, a range of two other elements of giftedness. Look at verse 5. There are differences in ministries. And verse 6, there are diversities or differences of activities. Okay? Now, this is where I'm going to focus my time, and then I'm going to give you something, help you. Differences in ministries, diakonon, okay? There are differences in places to serve. different locations. There's a range of locations of ministries in which spiritual gifts can be used. Now, I'm going somewhere with this, so I'm building kind of a case. There is a variety of settings to use one's spiritual gift. Makes sense, right? This isn't any big surprise. We know this. Dwight Hunt in the Grace New Testament Commentary, quote, "Ministries speak of those places in which the gifts function." Simple. Bob Deffenbaugh wrote, "The spiritual gift is the God-given ability. The ministry, the diakonion, is the sphere in which our divine enablement is exercised." So there's the gift and there's the location or the sphere or the place, okay, where that gift can be used. Everybody got it? Everybody with me? Simple. Nothing new. You haven't learned one thing yet. And so, number one, I have a spiritual gift. I have two or three. My wife has two or three or four. You certainly probably have two or three or four or more. I have no idea. I have a spiritual gift. Number two, I have a million places. I'm exaggerating. But I have a million places in which a spiritual gift that I have might be used. Okay? Now, but here's the kicker. Here's the kicker. Here's where I'm going. This is why I'm doing this. Here's the kicker. There's a diversity of activities. And that's not really a great word in English. The word activities is energema. Almost think of energy. Dwight Hunt in the New Testament Grace Commentary, activities, energematon, means effect or results. Bauer, Arndt, and friends see this as a diversity of, and I quote, capability. I like to use the word impact because they also use the word impact. So there's a spiritual gift, there's different places it can be used, and there are different impacts in those locations. And so we're talking about, some words like this are used when you begin to look into it, Holy Spirit energized impact with a specific gift in a specific location. Now, how often do you get to quote John MacArthur at a GES conference? But I agree with Bob. He has a lot to say about spiritual gifts. And this is what he says, and I liked it. There are varieties of energizings. From the Greek word energematon, energizings. God empowers differently the believer for functioning. This is divine energizing. The Father is involved in energizing us. And there are differences of energizings. He loves this word. It's amazing when we begin to function in the capacity God has gifted us for. There's a flow of divine energy that is thrilling. Got it? Now, let's say you have the gift of hospitality, okay? Let's say you have the gift of hospitality and you choose to use that gift because you've experienced it over time, and you choose to use that gift in your home. It can be used in a lot of different places, not just the home, but use it in your home. Now, let's say you're like my wife, Donna, who has this gift. Now, what you'd see is off the charts impact in our home when she uses this gift. Christians and non-Christians are welcomed into our home. They are cared for and they are loved. One friend told me one time, one guy sailed with in New Zealand, he said it's like entering a 5-star resort in a 1-star home. And I didn't know how to take that. I kind of liked my home. In fact, he was Danish and he said, you know what? He put his feet up on the table and he said, this house is hookly. And I said, hookly, what is that? And he said this, he said, that's more than warm and friendly. Hookly means more than just being cozy, friendly. You can put your feet up on the table. I can be myself. And he said, I feel like I matter in this home. And I'll never forget that. Her gift, hospitality. Where she uses it almost all of the time is in our home. And the power, the energizing from God, the impact is huge, huge in our home with that one gift. When I watch her, I see what Peter called in chapter 4, 1 Peter. I see the manifold grace of God just exploding throughout our house. I see people loved and I see them respected. I sense God is honored and God is pleased. Now, questions. Back to some common sense. Do you have a spiritual gift? Do you? Answer me.
Yes.
Yes. You have a spiritual gift. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 7. The manifestation of the Spirit is given to each one for the profit of all. You have a spiritual gift. At least one, I'm guessing. Do you know what your spiritual gift is?
Yes.
Good. I was going to say, I hope so. Because 1 Corinthians 12, 1, concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I do not want you to be ignorant. 1 Timothy 4, verse 14, do not neglect the gift that is within you. Okay? Are there a million, I'm exaggerating somewhat, are there a million places in which to use a particular gift?
Yes.
Yes. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 5, there are differences of ministries. Now, let's say you have a teaching gift. Where might you use it? Will you teach adults? Will you teach teenagers? Will you teach children? Will you teach leaders? Will you teach men, women, missionaries, those who are hurting, the downtrodden, the weak, the strong? Will you disciple new believers? Will you teach in seminary? Will you teach in a Sunday school class? Will you teach formally? Will you teach informally? Will you teach in the home, the church? Will you teach at a fitness center? My wife and I belong to a fitness center in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Every Wednesday when we walk in, there's a group of men having a Bible study, and the same guy says, hello. How you doing? Like, why don't you come? Let's say you have the gift of mercy. Where might you use it? With older people in your neighborhood? Serving meals on wheels in your city like my mother did? In the hospital or the hospice? As a nurse like my wife did? Or as a volunteer like my wife has done? With sexually abused women as a friend does right down the road from us on our little country road? Former professor at the University of Connecticut? Serving the poor in the community? In your church, showing compassion to untold numbers that are in your church that are hurting. Maybe you'll go to the mission field and you'll show the heart of God in some remote village. There are a million places you might show your gift of mercy. Where will you go? Now, the next question is, how much time do I have? Where am I? Next question is the power, is the impact the same in every place? What's the answer? No, it is not the same in every place. This is common sense. 1 Corinthians 12, 6, there are diversities of effects, of impact. A spiritual gift does not have the same impact in every setting. A spiritual gift has a different impact in different settings. Now, there's common sense counsel in all this. You have a certain gift or a certain gift mix. That's the what. You can choose the location of its use. That's the where. But choose wisely the where you use your gift, because there is a difference in the wow. There's a difference in the impact. There's the what, the where, and the wow, or the lack of it. You take Mother Teresa, you look at her gift of mercy, you put her in the slums of India. Wow, wow, what that woman could do. You take Howard Hendricks, one of my professors, the gift of teaching, put him in a seminary classroom. I don't know about behind a pulpit in a church every Sunday. He used to say, nah, but you put him in a seminary classroom. I used to take my non-Christian friends to his class and they'd go, wow, who is this guy? But I also had a friend, an American friend. His gifts were teaching and evangelism. When he was in Zimbabwe, his impact was off the charts. He moved to New Zealand, and it was close to zero, and he left in tears, showed up in my house one morning, and he goes, "It was easier in Africa than it was in this country. I can't do it here. I'm going home." I had a friend, gift of leadership, where singles ministry, the impact was impressive. Pastor of a small church, so-so, not really that strong. Moved him to a large church and he was fired. Common sense helps us think these things through. Now here's what I want to do, and I'm going to wrap up with this. Let me apply all this and try to show you why I think it's so important. Let me show you a chart that I use with a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being high. You put your name there. This is on your handouts, by the way. You put your spiritual gift. You put the where. You put the impact. And you might add the category of joy or satisfaction. Most everybody tends to, and I think that's fair enough. Okay? So you start there and people go, "Well, my goodness, I can't do this right now. This takes time." That's right, it takes time. It may take decades for you to sort this out in your own life. You're not going to learn this overnight. A lot of experimentation. Now let's put some information in this. Let's put Steve in there, me. Let's take a teaching gift and let's say Pulpit United States of America. Now if I'm honest, I think my impact when I preach in a church, almost any church, it's probably about a 7. Okay? You may be going, "Wow, you're grading yourself awfully high." Okay, well, fine. But about a 7. But my joy is like an 8 or a 9. That's how I feel. Okay? So there's my gift. There's the where. And there's about the impact I have. 7. Okay? I'm not Chuck Swindoll. Okay? Now, let's add a little bit more information. Let's put Steve, teaching gift, pulpit in New Zealand, where I lived for 20 years. You know what my impact was? About a 4. And my joy was about a 4. It was painful. I lived there 20 years and gave my life to that place, taught in every corner of that country. I've been gone 3 years. I never get an invitation to come back and teach in New Zealand. Ever. I was a 4 at best. And I worked really, really hard in improving it. And I think 1 year it jumped to like a 4.4. Okay? Now let's add a little bit more. Let's put Steve, teaching gift, pulpit in Kenya where I go every year. I'm telling you, it's an 8 or a 9. Those people love me. "We can't get enough of you. Will you please come back? Why don't you come back and pastor our church? Just come back here and live." And the joy I get is a 10. So it's different everywhere I go. Same teaching gift, different location, different impact. Okay? Got it? Now let me give you another one. Look at the bottom one. Ask me to teach teenagers. My impact at most is a 2. And joy, I'm in misery. I'm always at, "Steve, will you come to our youth conference?" "No." "Steve, please, we need somebody." "No." "We're begging you." "No." "We'll put a bullet through our heads if you don't come." "Go ahead." "I'm not coming." "What, are you afraid? You little scaredy cat? Or is something wrong with you?" "No, you're asking the wrong guy. I'm terrible at it. I can't teach teenagers, okay? I can't do it. I try. I work hard. I'll work as hard teaching a teenager as I do getting prepared to come here and teach you. It's no good. I can't do it." Okay? Now, let me give you this one. Let's take my wife. Teaching, adults, impact. I don't know. You know why? Because she won't do it. She's in misery. She gets mad at me. When we go to countries like Kenya and they go, "Now we need Donna to stand up front and do a little," I go, "Donna," she's mad at me immediately. "I've told you not to allow this to happen." Okay? So I don't know if she has a teaching gift with adults. I think she might, but I don't know. She's miserable and she's angry. She lets the sun go down on her anger. But now look at this. Look at this. Add 2-year-olds. You ought to see her with 2-year-olds. She's a 9 or a 10. She's off the charts. And her joy is she'll do it, but she doesn't really like your children. That's the problem. I'm teasing. That was a joke. But you put her with 2-year-olds, and it's like, I can't even keep up with her, okay? I can't even do it. Got it? Now, put me in there, Steve teaching 2-year-olds. I'm a 1, and I'm in misery. And she told me one time that I can jump to a 2 if I just wear a fake beard. She said that helps. But there you go. Look at all that. 9, 10, she doesn't have a teaching gift, but she's a 10 with 2-year-olds. I'm a 1, but I might be a 7 with adults in a pulpit ministry. This thing moves all the time. Got it? This is common sense help right here. Okay? Now look at this. Here, I'll play with Billy Graham. You want to see Billy? Here's Billy. Billy Graham, gift of evangelism, stadium. What's his impact? 10. I bet his joy is 10, I'm guessing, on Billy somewhat. Okay? Put me in a stadium, and I have a minor gift of evangelism. I have a gift of evangelism. I love it. But put me in a stadium. I'm a 2, and I'm in misery the whole time. And there'll be, I can see people out there going, when is George Beverly Shea going to sing again? When is this guy just going to sit down? We need him off the stage. That's what would happen. Okay? Now, let me add this information about evangelism, though. Now, I may be being mean to Billy on this one. Okay, so don't come up and get mad at me. Put Billy on a New Zealand sailboat where the sailors for 20 years are cussing and cursing and telling the filthiest jokes imaginable and cursing God because the wind changed direction and we're going to lose a race. Now, I'm guessing, I don't know how Billy would do. Maybe 5? I don't know if he'd just shut down, go down below and put his head under a pillow. I don't know what he'd do. I don't know what his joy would be. But you put me on those sailboats and I was in my element. I could listen to them all day long. I didn't pay attention to it. I'd ignore it. It didn't influence me. I wouldn't laugh at their filthy jokes. I just worked harder than the next guy on the boat. And then they'd come over to my house when a friend died and they'd want to have a cup of coffee and talk about spiritual things. And that's me. The joy was 10. So put me in a stadium, I'm going to die 1,000 deaths. Put me on a New Zealand sailboat, and I can't be happier. Everybody see it? Pretty cool, huh? Now, look at this one. Look at the gift of hospitality. My wife is a 10, easy, and her joy is a 10. I think I have somewhat of a small gift, but she says my impact is 2 because I don't help. She said, I'd jump to a 4 if I just run the vacuum before they show up. So you got all this going on. And this is important. Now, this takes time to get to this place. You don't learn this by taking a test, okay? You get this. Someone asked this morning a question. 1 minute. I can do this. No, I can't. Anyway, someone asked this morning, well, how do you find out your gifts? It's really simple. I don't think you take some of those tests. How would you know what position you would play on a football team if you had never seen the game of football and you walked out on the field and watched the players playing? How would you know? You wouldn't know till you got out there and started playing. Well, I think I'm a wide receiver. Okay? Well, I'm not going to know till I get out there and run down the field and try to catch a pass. Well, I think I want to be a quarterback. Well, you're not a quarterback. Okay? So you got to get out on the field and you got to give it a try and you got to play the positions and then you need feedback from the coaches. And it takes time to get to this place. You're not going to learn this by taking some test. You wouldn't know what position you'd play on a football team by taking a test in a classroom. Now, what do I make of all this? What's the points? Here they are very quickly because I'm supposed to finish. It makes common sense to me, biblical sense to me, to use my gifts where they have the most impact. All right? If you call me and ask me to do your teen retreat, I'm going to say no. I will do them. I have done them. I will. But I'm just telling you. But if you call me to do a men's retreat, as someone here at the conference called me earlier this year and asked me to come, I would say, and it's only because my schedule didn't allow it, I'll come. I'd love to talk to men. And then I'll preach in their church on Sunday like they asked to do. Number two, I am more than willing to sacrifice and do those things I'm not good at, but my life and my ministry takes on a high level of enthusiasm, study, preparation, and delivery when I'm using my gift where God energizes. Simple. 15 years ago, I was asked to leave New Zealand for the U.S. to pastor a large church here in America. They asked me to pray about it, and honestly, I wasn't honest. I said, I'll pray about it. I'm not sure I did. I did maybe barely. I felt limp, wobbly at the thought of coming back to the U.S. and being a senior pastor of a large megachurch. And I just said, Lord, listen, this is, if you want me to do this, of course I'll do it, but you need to prove it by the Cubs winning 3 World Series in a row. Plus, my wife told me that if I accepted it, she'd kill me in my sleep. I was never a high-quality, high-impact lead pastor. Never. Why in the world would I take such a position? Number three, my job as a pastor, a shepherd, is to help the flock discover their gifts, to help the flock find a location in which to powerfully use their gifts. Growing up, I had a gift, a natural gift to play baseball. I could play baseball. I loved it. But I could not pitch, and I could not play shortstop. I couldn't play those positions. No one ever put me there. If they did, they took me out immediately. But I could play left field. And I could run, and I could hit. And it was there that my enthusiasm and my impact were the greatest. 1 Corinthians 12 gives us common sense help leading us to our best and most powerful position on the field of play. Fair enough? Anybody mad at me? Does this help a little? Okay. All right. Questions? Anybody want to ask me anything? You don't have to. We're going to do the cards. Okay. I like the cards because I can ignore them. I can read a different. Yes. Oh, what? They're supposed to be in your packets. Oh, no. We'll get them to you. I sent them in. Bethany, what happened? Bethany, this is your fault. This is, you failed at your giftedness, and there you go. We'll sort it out. I'm sorry. I mailed it in. I don't know what happened. We're supposed to bring them themselves? I didn't get that memo. Sorry. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'll tell you what. If you'll on your card, write down your email address and hand it to me. I'll mail it. I'll attach it and mail it to you. It would be helpful to you to get these charts and everything. Okay? I'm happy to do that. All right, you were married 46 years. When did you get married? What? I was 10 years old when I got married. Often people will say, that's not my gift when it comes to serving in positions in a church, like manning the nursery or two-year-olds. How would you answer that? Yes, it's misery, but someone needs to do it. That's exactly right. I agree. I don't have the gift of taking out the trash at home, but the trash has to go out. So someone's got to do it. And my wife would not enjoy teaching your 2 or 3-year-olds in your church, though she's really good at it, but she'll do it. She doesn't get enthused and excited about it. Someone's got to bend over backwards and pull these things off. I get that. And I tease about a teen conference, a teen retreat and everything. I'll do it if it just has to be done. I'm just saying, you know, sometimes people don't really work hard at finding someone to really pull this off that's gifted, okay? Who do you really want working in your 2-year-old ministry? People that are passionate about 2-year-olds and love children, right? and have an ability to teach two-year-olds. So maybe one reason why we don't have them in our children's ministry is because 63% of us don't even know what our spiritual gifts are. 2 out of 3 of us don't even know what our gifts are, and we don't know that it's important to find out where those gifts might best be used. So maybe, I don't want to say it, but maybe we're not doing a great job in leadership in these churches and teaching about spiritual gifts and these kinds of things, helping people understand this. Okay, anybody else? A question? Anything? No? That's it? Yes. Yes, yes. Well, we know some things are true. You have been given a gift or more by the Holy Spirit, okay? So it would make sense. He's given you that gift. You want to unwrap that one first, right, and really mature it, grow it. And then you might, as you're doing that, you might go, well, wait a minute, I'm also pretty good at this. Okay, I was an average leader in the United States as a pastor, but when I got to New Zealand, my gift took a dip of teaching, but my leadership gift took a hike in New Zealand, and I launched what was a super successful advanced Christian leadership training program, and I had Bible colleges coming to me asking me if they could endorse it and accredit my program. So I didn't know that. I didn't know that was going to happen. I thought I was going to go to New Zealand and take over this church and preach, and my gift would be the same there that it was in the States, but no, my gift, you know, so you're just constantly moving and trying things. I'll do that. And you go, whoop, that's not me. Or let me try something else. I'll tell you a quick story about this. This might help answer the question. I had a guy in our church in Colorado Springs. I won't tell you his name because you might recognize it. This was way back when we planted the church in the mid-80s. And I really liked this guy. He's a great heart, great spirit. And I went to him one time and I said, do you know what your spiritual gifts are? What you might be doing to serve the Lord? He goes, I don't. And I said, well, that's sad. Do you think you might have an idea what your spiritual gift might be? And he said, I think it might be teaching. And I went, okay, well, how have you been a Christian this long and you don't know? He said, because every church I've ever been, I've never been given a chance to teach. Well, that broke my heart. That was easy to solve, wasn't it? So I called up one of my small group leaders, and I said, this couple is not even in a small group. I'd like you to maybe consider taking them into the group. And once you get to know him, I'd like you to give him an evening where he teaches one of the Bible studies in your group, just one. And then I want you to tell me how he did. So, make a long story short, this all happens, and this small group leader comes back to me and goes, this guy is phenomenal. Really? Okay, well, let's put him in our adult Sunday school class, and let's have him sit in and listen, and let's get the leader of that class to let him teach one Sunday. This guy's phenomenal. Really? Okay. To make a very long story short, that guy went on to become a well-known messianic Christian teacher in the United States and was on the radio all over America, teaching, presenting his view from a Jewish perspective and teaching the Word of God. And he always would write me and go, I'd have never gotten there if someone hadn't given me a chance and cared. So, yes. Yeah, I think you get feedback from coaches on the field and from fellow players on the field. This is not that complicated. People really make it complicated. I'm going, wait, just get out and play the game and ask for feedback. Get honest feedback. So listen to people. Now, you got to be careful with the feedback you get because sometimes it can be bad. It can be wrong. It can be someone just trying not to hurt your feelings, blah, blah, blah. We all know that. But you've got to get the feedback from the coaches and your fellow players. And it's going to take time. Fair enough? Yeah. Okay, anybody else? Yes. No, it doesn't necessarily exclude it, but see, those gifts, these are different. Spiritual gifts is an endowment from the Holy Spirit. It's a spiritual gift. So it comes from God, okay? Your natural gifts, some will put it this way, it comes from your parents. It's genetic, okay? And then there is gifts that are developed, okay? So you might say, well, I don't even know how to play the piano, but you might not be gifted spiritually or naturally to do that, but you're going to develop a gift of playing the piano or the guitar or something like that. I don't know. But there's three different sets of gifts. Only charismata are spiritual gifts, and they can overlap. But let me tell you something. I've seen untold numbers of individuals who you look at a teaching gift. I have two sets of retired university professors that live on our country road with us from Idaho and Connecticut. And I will tell you, watching them and listening to them and listening to their spiritual lives, they can teach in a university setting, but they could not teach spiritual truth in the church. And I see this all the time. All the time. So you got to be real careful. Well, I'm a natural teacher in a university. Well, that doesn't mean you can teach me spiritual truth. So... yes.
I just want to say that when you think you found your gift and you pursue it and you fail, that's not the end.
Oh, my goodness. If it were the end, then I would have given up a very, very long time ago, because there's a lot of gifts I thought I had, and no, I did not have them. There's just no way. So you just got to keep trying. Look, if you love the game of football, you want to find a position on the field, right? You want to sort it out. So you just keep trying. I know I have. See, the difference between what I'm talking about and the game of football, you know you have a place on the field for God. There's a place out there for you, okay? There's a position for you. So, yeah, well, that's not me. I failed over there. But you're going to find something somewhere.
If
well, there you go. There you go. I think that's tremendous. I can't say my experience has been like that, but I accept that for sure. Anybody else have a question? Can I ask you sincerely, does this help a little bit?
Yes.
It does broaden the whole idea of spiritual gifts, doesn't it? Makes it a little bit like, wait a minute, this is bigger than just knowing what my spiritual gift is. And so I hope it does, because I use it with leaders and it helps them. I've just seen too many men and women I love with all my heart, and they'll say, I'm going to go do this. And I'll go, okay, can we talk? Maybe this, I don't know. Someone has a gift of evangelism and they think they can be a missionary overseas. Oh my goodness, really? No, that doesn't compute always, does it? So... anyway, all right, thank you for coming, and thank you for your questions. Thank you for being kind.